it will become a real places of the pure. So the only ideal for man is to be perfect and complete. Saint Paul said, "You are complete in Godhood." I am quoting all these things to let you know what the scriptures tell us. We belong to those religions. We do not know what our scriptures say. We are great in man. So, very legend enjoins the worship of perfect men too, who are at one with God. Amongst the six, they are supposed to turn to khalsa. Khalsa means pure. And the definition is given, he is the khalsa pure man in whom God's life light is effulgent. Whole light is effulgent. Similarly, you will find in the Mohammedans, those who want to become Mohammedans, who see the light of God. In Hinduism also, they light candles outside, and also to light the candle with. And Christian also sees the light of God, taking that the light within you is not darkness. So all have got the same degree, but we have forgotten. So that is why Master comes from time to time to revise us to this truth which we have forgotten. All other bodies of this creation has been made subservient to man. God, man is considered to be the next to God. When the angels bow down, also bow down before the man body. To Ruskin, likewise expresses the same truth. He says, there is no wealth but life. We are worship of light, of life. If life is empty, who cares for the man body? If the lamp is, I got no eyes, no wick, no thing, who cares for the lamp? If the bulb is fused, who cares for the bulb? So there is no wealth but life, life including all its powers of love, peace and admiration. The country is the richest, which nourishes the greatest number of noble and happy human beings. The country is the richest. That man is the richest who, having perfected the function of his own life to the utmost, has also the widest helpful influence, both permeating and by means of the possession of the other's life. So such like worship of such men is given up by all scriptures. Naturally, he commands to say. So we have got. So this science, to know oneself, we are spiritual man, we are eternal, never die, man's body has been given the golden opportunity in which we can realize that. So this practical subject is God's spirituality, not only having the labels of one religion or this, that makes no difference. So Master tells us always, the knowledge of all knowledge is what? To know oneself. The Persian philosophers tell us. We have dwelt physically, of course, and intellectually, and not spiritually. O seekers after God, you have lost Him in the very worldly of the sense. We are given up, identified with the senses outside. So much so that we have forgotten ourselves, who we are, what we are. So the world religion means what? To bind, reem is back, lead you to bind one back to God. And the word yoga also means the same. Yoga means, comes from the root yuj, means to unite. Unite us with God. So fortunately, together do the two dwell in close association in the same abode, in the same body, And strange enough, what, as it may seem, the two have never conversed with each other. We are also in the body, and the power which controls us in the body is also there. But strange enough, we have never thought of that. And we go around seeking anywhere else. Kabir said, I went to pay pilgrimage to Mecca. On the way, God met me and rebuked me. Who told you I am there? I am within you. On the very life of you. So all masters tell us like that. They say you and that God power is both within this man body. And where are you? You are just identified with your world outside. Why don't you withdraw your attention from outside? He is waiting for you within you. So it is hold the feet of attention. This is tension is what? The drop of the ocean of all attention. You are great in man. You can work wonders. If you put in that attention in your body, you become physically strong. Wrestlers, you know, when you exercise, they put in whole attention in the body. If you put in your attention to the centers of the brain within you, you become intellectually strong. So this is the whole feat of attention, you see. And Master says, look here, you and God both are lying in the same bed. You are sleeping, awake outside. Why not sleep outside and awake? He's waiting for you. So religion, in fact, what it is, it's a way back to God. That's all. Nothing else. And we have considered to be something else. Religion, in fact, is a way back to God, or a link, linking the soul with God, the old. That religion is blessed in terms of such religion. Pity it is that we have forgotten what our scriptures say. As long as there are practical people knew the ideal before them, and they also were competent to give them some demonstration of that, how to know oneself, to know God. For want of them, the same good old custom corrupted itself, as I spoke to you before. And ever since this paid preaching has started in all regions, have been done. Blind knees, blind in both hearts in the ditch. I am not quoting you somewhere else, from the scriptures I am quoting. That are our scriptures. So we are fortunate in the 20th century that we have got scriptures. All masters who came the past over. So there is hardly now a man to tell us how to rise up above God. In all religions you find, they preach outward things, customs, rituals, how to maintain, say prayers, this and that, this is all to first step. If a man does not remain in any ism, then there will be corruption. So man is a social being, he must remain in some social body. But to remain therein, we should rise above them and see what is the basic teaching of all religions. And basic teaching of all religions is said, what I am quoting you. So spirituality is another name of, I may say, Surya Yoga. What is Surya Yoga, you know? It is just spiritual life consists in peeling off layer by layer the various koshas or sheets, physical, astral, and causal, until its science holds in its pristine splendor, self-luminosity. God is light, all sheets are given is full light. Who sees the full light is the Khalsa, is the true Hindu, is the true Mohammedan, is the true Christian. Then you know, I am soul. I and my Father are one. Man has taken the same color of the God. In Sanskrit they say, Tattvam Asi. You see? Brahm Asmi. So, These are the things to be realized, O Nanak. What is said is the mouthpiece of God. Such like people, they become the mouthpiece of God. They speak as inspired by God. So, in all things, Guru Nanak says that do not utter any word except inspired by God. And God is eyes in man. So Mala Rum says, God has given orders to the prophet. He says, well, look here, I am so great that all this creation, universes created by, are not sufficient to contain me. High heavens, low earth, now also. But strange enough, I contain myself in the heart of a saint. Did you want to seek me, go in there, where I am manifest. So these are the things, you see, that is given to us by all masters before us. So Christ said, I and my Father are one. All the things are delivered to me of my Father. I am in the Father. And I am in the Father. And the Father is in me. The words I speak unto you, I speak of not of myself, but the Father that dwelleth in me. He doeth the work. What more to say? All of the masters say the same thing. I am the mouthpiece of God. I and my Father are one. I simply speak as inspired by God. They are conscious co-worker of the divine plan. They see that power is working. I am not. I am mere mouthpiece. So it is the fundamental law of God that no one can move Godward without the help of his Sadguru, like a master. This Guru Ram Dass says. As Christ said, nobody can go to the Father except through me. So these are no new things given by one another. All masters say the same thing. Mala Rum says, who are they such like masters? They are the godly souls clothed in human body and come with God's knowledge. They come from unknown places. What to do? To take back souls back to God. Yes. Working like that. You know what Christ did say? I have come to separate daughter from the mother, to separate husband from the wife, sisters from the brothers. I have come not to make world happy, but I have come to take all these back home. When he was going down, our master once went to dinner, go to the hills. It was very hot season. And nearly every year he wanted to go to the hill station. I was there and just asked him, well, it is very hot here. Would it not be better you go to the hills as usual? He said, it was asking people think perhaps I go there to enjoy the cold over there. I simply go, the men from all over India come out there. Though they are seeking, they may be led away. So they come. Dinda Christ said, I have yet many sheep to look after. They come to bring back all children of God to home. But so he remains ever with you whether you live or die. Such a man. If you die, he won't leave you. Christ said, I shall never leave thee nor forsake thee till the end of the world. Isn't it? Even at the place of reckoning, he shall stand by thy side. So all your accounts are transferred from the Lord of Judgment to the Master, who is God in man. So such a one, to have, it is a great blessing to have a living Master, who will be with you in this earthly life, and also won't leave you when you feel leave this man body. You will be young. Who can do so, only take the hem of such a such a one. So when you cross over the star, sun, moon, the luminous form of Master, manifested to taking charge of the soul and takes it on the higher planes, you see, unless you are born in you, you cannot enter the kingdom. So this is what I meant when I say, you are on probation, you are lent further by that God into special radiant form of the water within you. So as long as spirit does not rise above the body consciousness, he remains stranger to the spiritual realm beyond. That's the first step. Where the world's last is end, there the religion starts. And that's in a way the same for all. Whether you bear one form, one level of one religion or the other, that makes no difference. So everything is within the body, nothing without it. He who seeks without wanders in delusion. Those who go to such a master, they always try to go within you. Our master, you see, well, why take somebody who goes within and takes you along with you? So it is a very definite way, inner way. One has been with all masters who came before. So all that we see is great optical illusion. We are identified with the body. You see, body is changing, being of matter. All world around us is changing at the same speed. As we are identified with it, we consider it all stationary. When everything changes, when you rise above us, you see the world in its right perspective. So that is why masters all been advising like that. But please know yourself, who you are, what you are. So this is the main subject, purpose of coming into the world. Unless we know ourselves, we cannot know God. So God is world, you see, world as God when came into being, it is called world. World is the cause of all creation. God is nameless when it came into being, into expression, this is called Naam. So God is, what is God? It is God is love and God is divine, all divine. So Master is world made flesh. When such masters come, they come with overflowing with the love of God and divinity of God. They come by radiation to all people at large. Those who sit in the field of action of the radiation, they are blessed. So they come, they bring the religion of love and no new religion. So all masters who have come, they gave up the same thing. Christ said, love thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy strength. And love thy neighbor as thyself. This also, you see, Kabir said the same thing. Tenth Guru, while addressing to all communities, tells them, well, hear ye all, I tell you the truth, but those who love, they alone can know God. So by Saint Paul said, by love one and by love serve one another. One who serves his fellow loves God truly, otherwise not. He says, I love God and does not love the God into expression power working in the world, then how can he say he loves God whom he has not seen? So he prayeth best who loveth best. You know, because love is one-pointed, single-minded, pointed attention. With whom you love, that's a single-minded. Nothing else interferes with that. When you are loving God naturally, all other thoughts, foreign thoughts don't affect you. Man who loves somebody, he is sitting maybe hundreds of people, but his whole attention is there with whom he loves. So such a man, while in the world, is in the world, yet out of it. He is not of the world. So for that reason, God is love and love is God, and the way back to God is also through love. If God is us in every heart, we are all of the same essence as that of God. Then if you want to meet God, what should you do? Should you torment those men? Whom you want, he also resides there. So love knows service and sacrifice. There are greater heinous crimes in the world, heinous sins, one greater than the other. Mawlana Rumi says, you may drink. Drinking is the mother of all evils. That's a very sick, great sin. And there's still more greater sin than that. You burn away all scriptures of the world. Of course, that's a very great sin. Then still more, there's a greater sin than that. Burn all places of worship. And if with all these, there's still more greater than sin, don't torment anybody. So love knows service and sacrifice. God is love. And naturally, when you come to give this religion of love, love knows service, and also if need be, to sacrifice ourselves for that. Tenth Guru says, those who want to play the game of love, they should lay their hands on their palms and come forward. Who can sacrifice themselves, they can only meet God. We sacrifice God for the sake of the world. One man went to a sadhu. He prayed, your gate, you have renounced the world, you are outside the world, like that. We prayed him very much. And he said, look here, you are the great one who has sacrificed God for the world. And we have sacrificed only world for God. Who is the greater man who has renounced the world? Naturally, you are. So masters say like that, you see, service. If we love God, naturally, what will happen? Whom we love, we never think of harming him. If he's hungry, you try to share with him. If he's naked, you would like to give him clothes. Even at the sacrifice of your own self. The more you love him, the more you can make sacrifice. And if we love God, can we not make sacrifice for those in which he resides? So truly speaking, those who say he love God and hate the people all around, then he is a liar. There is a parable to go, to show in the scriptures or the Puranas of the Hindus. Masters speak sometimes through parables and sometimes straight talk. By parables is given to those who are not very great understanding. But to bring home this, all these things they give up. Told the Lord which you invited, all gods and goddesses, as well as those anti-gods, for a banquet. Food was served, and they are made to sit, gods in their own rows, and the anti-gods in another row. And the food was served, Lord which you should have. Look here, gentlemen, all this is food for you. Eat to your heart's content. But one condition is there, you should not bend your elbows to bring the food in your mouth. How can you bring food to your mouth? Anti-gods considered, but they said, Lord Vishnu has played a mockery. They put food and it doesn't allow us to eat. They left the scene, discussed it. The gods were there, they considered that the world coming out of Lord Vishnu must be some meaning behind it, which you do not know. When considering calmly, they came to know why to bend, why to straight up. So they had gone all your fat to the utmost. Purpose is, you see, if we want to make us happy, our own self, we must make others happy. Everybody wants to make others happy, naturally everybody is happy. We won't allow anybody to die of hunger, we won't die of hunger. So love knows salvation is sacrifice. This is what. So best of all, you see, all these holy places of worship, they are putting some symbols of God in them to be worshipped. You see, these are symbols of God. For instance, their churches, their temples, their other holy places of worship, they are often made out of model of man body. They put in two symbols of light and sound. God is light and God is music of the spheres, nada. Now those are the models, whether it is church, or a temple, or any other place, they are all equally situated. They are models made out of the man body. And which is the true body? True temple of God, the man body itself. That was given to outside people for the beginners to know that such light sound is such light. Music of the spheres reverberating within you. When the master met, they gave them a demonstration of that, how to rise above body consciousness and open the inner eye to see the light of God. And open the inner ears to hear the voice of God. So God sent man with seals on their eyes and ears. And they come back in the form of manifold and they go and break the eye. Seals on the eye, they begin to see, then they begin to hear. So that is why Christ said, I have come to make those people see who do not see. And those who see, they may be blind. It is attention only which gives all light outside. So truly speaking, you see, one truth is working in all. Basic teaching of all. This is our narrow-mindedness for want of the truth. Not knowing the truth, that all the differences have been made between man and Brahman, high class and low class. God made equal privilege to everybody. He did not make any high or low. Born the same way, same soul, or the same essence as that of God, and the same power of God we worship. So when they come, they say, well, God, whether you called it Maker cow, or he is merciful, or this and that. These are all go to express that God power which is controlling all creation, and we worship him. The man who is living in the true temple of God, which is the man body, he goes to the temples made after the model of man, put in symbols of light and from there. That is for the beginners. But those who already realize this truth within us, they have respect for other things, for the beginners, but it doesn't behove a man in whom that light is effulgent. You see, doesn't already tell them, well, look at this light is within you, you just wake up. So masters, those who are risen above this in body conscience, they see the truth and give out to the people at large. So man should, for that purpose, what is required. For that purpose required ethical life, life of self-restraint, true living. Our earning should be honest, and our food should be, pacifying giving, and also character good. So the word religion means apparently to link man with God. That is the ultimate of all yoga. And Guru Arjan gives out very clearly, the highest of all religions is what? To be true, man of true living and know God. No doubt what level he is carrying. That is why amongst the Hindu Sikhs, the temple, golden temple made, arranged at Amritsar, the headquarters of all Sikhism. You know, foundation stone was laid out by whom? By the Mohammedan saint. When they arrived to that, where is the Hindu or Mohammedan question? The labels don't carry anything. So Guruji, what did he do? He collected as much things of the masters of the past as he could, about 60-70, and put it all in the six scriptures that we respect all. Those in whom God manifested and they came to awaken the mankind. So what was the purpose? The whole object was to unite all mankind in the silken bond of love and not create schism. We are all one. Now, scriptures of particular master you find in their own books. But six scriptures you find, they contain about 60, more than 60 saints, saints in that, whom God does. So they come to create love within us for God. They are overflowing with the love of God. You might have heard the Moses went to a wilderness, there was one shepherd. He was looking after the sheep over there. He was praying, God, oh God, love knows no love, mind that. Oh God, had you been hungry, I would have given the milk of the sheep to you to drink. Had you felt cold, and I would have taken off the wool of the sheep and made out a cloth to give you to warm yourself. And he went on like that. Then Moses passed by that way. He said, oh, heretic, what are you talking? Does God drink milk? And he was others, quite aback. So why have disrespected God? Then he began to cry. Why crying you? Went within himself and God met him. Look here, I will drink your milk also. I will wear your clothes also. And then Moses went to the inner contact. He said, oh, Moses, you were sent to those, connect those people who are separated from me, not those who are already linked to you, separated. Go and ask for forgiveness. So such is the way, you see, Master comes to unite all these two within us.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. This morning, our reader is Joanna Swanson. Are you there, Joanna?
I'm ready, John.
All right.
Good morning to all my very dear brothers and sisters. I have been reading from Master's book, The Mystery of Death. Last time we left off in Chapter 4, called Death and Bondage. This is the end of the chapter, towards the end, when Master is describing the four different types of human beings and what happens to them after death. To have some idea of what happens after death, let us have recourse to the scriptures. The Masters divide mankind into four categories. In the first group, there are those who have not had the good fortune to take refuge in any Satguru, and these form a considerable bulk. They have to go all alone, each a solitary soul by itself, without any friend and companion. All such souls have to appear before and abide by the decrees of the God of Justice, Dharmaraj, who dispenses stern and strict justice on the principle of as ye sow, so shall ye reap, without compassion or commiseration. This is what is called the inexorable law of karma, which works relentlessly. This law does not take into account any extraneous circumstances and admits of no exceptions. Castes, social classes, and colors avail naught there. One gets his meed, his reward, according to his deeds. And from Proverbs, every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord pondereth the hearts. At the appointed time of which no one is aware, good angels, Ramgans, or bad angels, Yamgans, as the case may be, come to take the spirit forcibly out of the body, and one has to go along with them. Excuse me. They escort the spirit to the judgment seat, and each spirit has to render account of his thoughts, words, and deeds. From Thomas Carlyle, "Fool, thinkest thou that because no Boswell is there to note thy jargon, it therefore dies and is buried? Nothing dies, nothing can die. The idlest word thou speakest is a seed cast into time, which brings fruit to all eternity." And Jesus, in no uncertain terms, declared, "And I say unto you, that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof on the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned." From St. Matthew 12. All thoughts, feelings, and emotions, all words uttered intentionally or unintentionally, all deeds done premeditatedly or casually, leave indelible impressions on the tablet of the mind, and the account has to be rendered after death. It is all a summary procedure, but just, with no provision for logic chopping or argument or appeal to any higher power, nor can there be any chance of release therefrom. The one who has indulged all his life in sinful doings is sent to hell, to undergo the penal servitude for a particular length of time as his misdeeds may merit, and thereby rid himself of the evil impressions and understand the law that works for his ultimate good. When the allotted time expires, the soul once again takes birth so that it may have another chance to lead a reformed life freed from the evil now washed off, and make a fresh start, avoiding the pitfalls of the past. If one leads a life of righteousness, he is assigned a place in heaven or paradise, where he, for some allotted time interval, enjoys the fruits of his good deeds, after which he too once again comes down to the earth plane. Thus, all souls ensconced in the karmic wheel of life move up and down by the ceaseless momentum of their own deeds. There is no escape from this ever-revolving giant wheel until one, by a stroke of good fortune, meets some sant sat guru, and the latter accepts him and helps him to a way out into the God way. The spirits, upon coming out of the netherworld of Pluto, gradually work their way up from mineral to the vegetable kingdom, then to the world of insects and reptiles, and on to that of the feathery fraternity, and next to quadrupeds, and finally to human beings. After passing through the wheel of 84, thou hast gained the top, O Nanak. Now take hold of the power of God and be thou eternally free. Even the devas, or the deities, the various gods and goddesses who are said to reign in regions of bliss, are there on account of their highly meritorious deeds on the lower planes. As soon as they exhaust the merit gained, they have also to return to the physical world. The blessed Lord Krishna, the adorable one, once explaining to Uddhava, a devoted disciple of his, pointed to an insect crawling in the filth and said, "Uddhava, this insect that you see before you has oftentimes been Indra, the god of thunder and rain, and has oftentimes been groveling in the dirt as at present. Such indeed is the fate of all. Even the avatars and incarnations, the embodiments of the powers of God, are not immune from the inflexible working of the karmic wheel and are also called to judgment. Like a soldier in an army, an avatar is not immune from liability under the civil law, in addition to his obligations under the military law governing his profession. Even if he may be doing his duty under the command of his superiors, which is law unto him under military regulations, he may incur a civil liability under civil law. His is a twofold responsibility, one under army law, to wit, to obey implicitly what the officers order him to do on pain of being court-martialed if he disobeys, and the other under the civil administration, if in the discharge of his duties he is found to have exceeded the limits of his military orders. Gods and goddesses and the incarnations of the various powers of God are therefore included in this category, so far as the law of karma extends. With all of their privileged position, they, including the entire host of angels, are under the law and not above the law. This is why they too seek human birth, in which lies the possibility of escape from the toils and struggles onward to the abode of peace eternal and life everlasting. Even the great rishis, with all of their austerities and penances, when the end of their allotted time draws nigh, wish and aspire for a human body in preference to celestial abodes in heaven as the shining ones, the devas. The rishis do so because it is in this way alone that they stand the chance of contacting a satguru, receiving instructions from him, and then rising above the inexorable law of causation or action and reaction. Heroes like Arjuna and the Pandava brothers, except for Yudhishthira, the embodiment of Dharma as he was commonly known and believed to be, were cast into the nether regions for engaging in a war, even though a war of righteousness and enjoined by no less a personage than the blessed Lord Krishna himself. Because in doing so, they could not, with all the exhortations from Lord Krishna, divest themselves of the idea of doership. Again, of Lord Krishna himself, it is said he met his death by the chance arrow shot by a Behil, a hunter, thus requiting his past karma committed ages before as Rama, who had killed the invincible Bali, a forest prince, by the artifice of shooting an arrow from behind the cover of a tree. Rama and Krishna, it may be mentioned, were both incarnations of Lord Vishnu in different ages. Similarly, King Dasharatha, the father of Rama, it is said that one night, while hunting in the forest, he heard a gurgling sound that seemed to him to be that of a wild animal lapping water close by among the rushes and reeds. Guided by the sound, he aimed his arrow in that direction, hitting a young man, Sarvan by name, who had gone to the riverside to obtain water in a pitcher for pannier on his back, and who had just left his blind and thirsty parents some distance away. Hearing the piteous and anguished cry of his victim, the king rushed towards the dying man, who told him of his plight and begged him to take the water to his parents. Full of grief, the king took the water to the aged couple and told them of the mishap. They could hardly bear the shock and died, bemoaning their lot, wishing the same fate as theirs for the unknown perpetrator of the crime. In course of time, the king met the same fate when he died in bitter agony caused by the pangs of separation from his son Rama, who had been exiled for 14 long years. This is how nemesis overtakes each one in his turn, meting out what is due to him. Thus, each one comes his own way into the world and goes out of it into the valley of death under the compulsive force of karma. Now, in the second category of mankind fall all persons who come in contact with a living perfect master, are accepted by him and initiated into the esoteric science of the soul, but for one reason or another, are not able to develop communion with the Holy Word to any appreciable extent, be it on account of indulgence in sense pleasures, lethargy, or something else. They stand on a different footing from those in the first category. At the time of death of these initiates, when the soul currents begin to withdraw from the body or a little earlier, the Satguru in his radiant form appears within to take charge of the departing spirit. The radiant form of the master gladdens the heart of the devotee, and he gets so absorbed in him that all attachments of the world fall off like autumn leaves. Then he fearlessly and joyously follows him into the valley of the shadow of death. And from Psalms, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, the inner light and inner sound. They comfort me." This indeed is his troth. "Every man, I will go with thee and be thy guide, in thy most need to go by thy side." The master constantly keeps a watch over the affairs of the disciple. He is ever with him in weal and woe. And from Nanak, he, the master, stands by him even before the judgment seat of God. With the dervishes, there is no reckoning of the deeds of their disciples. The master is all in all, the sole judge and arbiter of the disciples' deeds, whether these be righteous or unrighteous, and deals with them as he thinks best. And from St. John, "For as the Father hath life in himself, so hath he given to the Son to have life in himself, and hath given him an authority to execute judgment also, because he is the Son of Man." It is because of such a deep solicitude for the disciple by his master that Nanak so emphatically declares, "Love thou the true master and earn the riches true. He who believes in him unto the last, the master rescues him true. Like wandering sprites, the mind-ridden roam up and down, animals in human form, devoid of light through and through." Distance does not count with the master. The master power does come at the last moment or even earlier, no matter where the disciple may be, far or near. The master power apprises him of the impending, inevitable hour of his exit from the world, and accordingly comes to escort him. The subtle form of the master is resplendent and leads the spirit into higher regions. He assigns each spirit an appropriate place to which he may be entitled according to his sadhana or practice of the Holy Word during his lifetime, and he imparts to him the necessary instructions for further and fuller development on the spiritual path. And from St. John, "In my Father's house are many mansions, temporary dwellings. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you, and if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also." In case one is to be chastised for his laxities, the master himself administers the necessary chastisement, but never lets the disciple into the torture of hellfire. The divine balance holder, the king of shadows, Dharmraj, who judges each departed soul according to his deeds, has no authority over the disciples of the master, for they live in the name of the master. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous runneth into it and is safe. From Proverbs. It is not given to him, Dharmraj, to pass and execute judgment on the disciples of a true master. In all such cases, the master himself decides and does things as he thinks best. And from Psalm 147, the Lord taketh pleasure in them that fear, respect him, in those that hope in his mercy. And again from St. Paul's letter to the Hebrews, for whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. In brief, those who love the Master are never alone, nor are they answerable to any, nor do they suffer pain. But such initiates as have no love for the world are not reincarnated on the earth plane unless for some particular reason the Master deems it necessary to do so. And in that case, such a one does not slide down the scale of existence, but is reborn in some human family of pious and religious parents, so that the newborn easily gets into touch with the master saint and resumes on his path homeward from an early age without let or hindrance. For the incorruptible seed of the word sown by the master power ever remains within the depth of the disciple's soul, and in time cannot but sprout, blossom, and fructify by means of the water of life that he is sure to get from the true master of his lifetime. None can take away the gift of the guru. He who has bestowed it knows how to ferry the soul across. Once the seed is sown by a saint, none has the power to singe it. Hafiz, a mystic poet of Persia, says, on the day of reckoning thou shalt know for certain, in the land of dervishes there is no count of deeds. And Shams Tabriz, another mystic poet, says, death breaks away the cage, liberating the spirit. Death has no sway over the phoenix that dies to soar again. Why should I not fly back to my home? Why should I tarry in this clayey mold? The third category of mankind comprises such persons as make the most of the instructions and commandments imparted to them by the living master, but have not yet attained perfection, though they are well on the way to it. Such souls know of the day and time of their departure in advance of the event, since they are fully conversant with the death process and every day undergo its experience. They are not afraid of death and know firsthand its shadowy character. On the contrary, they wishfully and wistfully await the appointed time and voluntarily throw off the worn-out mortal mantle, just in the same way as they had put it on at their advent into the world. They know some of the higher planes of the spirit world, which they traverse day in and day out along with the master power. They also know the particular plane to which they are ultimately to go for their sojourn after death. There they live for some time and work their way up to still higher regions. They live all the time consciously in the love of the master, and the master power ever abides in them. He is their mainstay and support, and they owe no allegiance to anyone else. And from St. Paul's letter to the Galatians, led by the Spirit, they are no more under the law. Last but not least comes the category of perfected souls. While living on earth, they are liberated beings, jivan mukats, and lead a freed life of the Spirit. they know full well, far ahead of the time, as to when they have to go back to the house of the Lord, and gladly await the hour, welcoming the manner in which they are to quit the bodily frame. With no will of their own, they live in the will of God, and joyously embrace death as a means of reunion with the beloved, unmindful of either the swift or lingering process of death, as may sometimes be ordained by the religious zealots and tyrannical pontiffs and potentates, for that is the moment of highest jubilation for them. Therefore, they live out their span of life from moment to moment. They care not if they are flayed alive, hacked to pieces, or burned at the stake, nor if they are made to drink the cup of hemlock or nailed to the cross along with felons. They give a hearty handshake to death as it comes in their way, no matter what form it may assume. This, then, is the way that Guru Mukhs, the saints, and the prophets follow. Of Guru Amar Das, it is said that when the time of his departure drew nigh, he called for the Sangha, the congregation of initiates, and addressed them as follows. I am going back to Hari, the Lord. No one should weep for me. He will do so will incur my displeasure. After I am gone, be all engaged in the silent music of the soul. Similarly, Shamas Tabrez said, on the day of my death, as my bier slowly moves along, never for a moment feel that I am going with any regrets in life. When you see my coffin, utter not a word of separation, for then alone I am in union with the Lord. When I will turn my face away from the world, I will then be facing the eternal reality. Hazur Baba Jamal Singhji had foretold of his approaching end long before it actually came about. When he was nearing the end of his earthly pilgrimage, he said, I am going back to my native place, and none should press me to stay on. My mission in this life is over, and I have amassed immense spiritual riches. Happily, I go to the mansions of the Lord. It is a sacrilege to lament and bewail the passing away of saints, for verily do they go back to their own home. One may, if he like, shed copious tears at the death of a worldly soul who is forcibly ejected from and dragged out of the body by the prince of the netherworld and passes through devious processes up and down. O Kabir, why weep for a saint who goes back home? Weep, if you must, for the worldly wise who toss from hand to hand. Saints, when called back upon completion of their mission, are given an honored place in his court. To die such a death is a rare privilege and a great blessing, which may be envied by mighty kings and emperors. And to close, from Shamas Tabrez, the lovers know where and how to die. They accept and relish death as a gift from the beloved. With inner eye opened, they see the glory of God when others are forced blindfold into the blind alley. While the lovers wend their way happily to the Lord, the ignorant ones die a horrifying death. Those who pass sleepless nights in fear of God, they have no regrets in life, nor any hopes and fears. While here they seek his glance of grace, and merrily do they go in his holy presence. That ends our reading for the day. And in closing, I'd like simply to say thank you, Master, for all thy blessings, for this wonderful satsang, for permitting us to be together in thy name. Amen.
Thank you, Joanna, for the wonderful reading. Excuse me a minute, I'll do a count. So today we had 76 people at the satsang. Thank you, everybody, for attending. Thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now please hang up your phone.